Pressroots Podcast.
Welcome into another episode of the Press Roots Podcast. I am Mason Choate, co-host of the podcast, along with my friend Robert Stewart. We're very thankful for you listening to this podcast, and we got a great episode for you today. We have an awesome interview with Samantha Pell from the Washington Post. She is the Capitals beat reporter for the Washington Post. She was a great, great interview. She was very nice. We love talking to her, and I know you'll enjoy it. We love talking to these national people, getting outside of the state of Arkansas, and just kind of spreading our wings and talking to other people, which is awesome. And we hope you enjoy this interview with Samantha Pell. If you want to follow us on Twitter, it's at PressRootsPod. DM us if you would like. Just give us some ideas. You can also find us on the Traveler website. That is the student newspaper at the University of Arkansas. It's at uatrav.com. Our podcast will be found there as well. And you can find some stories that Robert and I write also. So thank you for listening to this, and please enjoy this episode with Samantha Pell.
And now we welcome Samantha Pell to the show. Samantha covers the Capitals for the Washington Post. Samantha, thanks for joining us today. Tell us about the bubble. How was that?
The bubble is definitely super interesting. So for the NHL bubble, at least, the media weren't allowed to actually be physically in the bubble. We were outside of the bubble. So I still had to quarantine in Canada, in Toronto, for 14 days in my hotel room. So I couldn't leave, couldn't even open a window situation. So that was definitely interesting. But once I got out of quarantine, I was allowed to be in the arenas, allowed to be, you know, basically where nobody else was, no fans. It was very limited media. We actually like sat in the stands, which is new. They just like set up kind of fake tables in our own little section. So I had my own 300 section to myself, which was super interesting. But yeah, definitely coverage wise was completely different than any other playoff situation anyone's ever been in. But definitely a good experience overall. Obviously the Capitals only got one round in, but it was a good experience.
Now, theoretically, if the Caps had made it to the conference finals, would you have had to do the same thing in Edmonton?
So no, because we'd be traveling within Canada. So basically, Canada has a rule that anyone entering the country has to quarantine for 14 days. But since it would just be Toronto to Edmonton, they technically would already say that I had done my 14-day quarantine and I would be okay. And especially because the community transmission is so low in Canada anyway, there's just like a less of a chance that me being out in Toronto would actually affect me traveling to Edmonton. So that would have been fine. That was like the least of our worries situation.
So going to just your job in general at the Post, that's a very big name newspaper. And as a young journalist, it's impressive for you to be working there. Is that really, first of all, how did you land that job? And second of all, is that your dream job? Or would you say that maybe there's some more things in store for you in the future?
Yeah, for sure. So I think the first question, how I got there. So I went to Arizona State for 4 years and I graduated in 2017. And I actually got an internship in the sports. I was a sports intern at the Post right out of college. So I got to basically experience every single sport possible at that time in my couple months that I was there right out of college. So I helped do baseball coverage. I helped do Capitals dev camp. I helped, you know, random soccer games. I think I covered my first soccer match for the Cap, like for the Washington Post when I was there. I covered my first ever hockey thing for the Post. So a lot of definitely new experiences. But yeah, that's how I kind of got my head start into the Post. Didn't have a full-time position for me right after my internship. So I actually went to the Dallas Morning News and covered high school football in Texas for 3 to 4 months, which obviously is crazy. You guys know what Texas high school football is like. So just another way for me to kind of get my experience in. And then the Post called me back that December of 2017 and basically said, hey, like, we have a job now if you want to come back and cover high school sports for us. So I went back and I covered, you know, some of the biggest like football, basketball teams in the DC area for high school sports. And then after doing that for about 2 years, I was also helping with the Capitals like a little bit in a backup role. And then I was able to become the Capitals beat writer last year. So this past season was my first full season on a hockey beat slash NHL beat slash pro beat. So it's definitely a lot of new experiences all in 1 year. And then I guess your second question was, is this my dream job, right?
Yes.
So I think it's kind of funny because I think a lot of people at the post are asked, like, is this our dream job? And honestly, I think the answer is we don't know, just because the Washington Post is such a good paper. I personally can't ever see myself leave unless something else crazy happens, just because it's such a good paper. The editors are great. My coworkers are great. It's really just I remember, I think one of the first stories that a lot of people told me was, when you walk into the Washington Post building, it's like an intern. It's kind of like a, oh my God, what is happening moment, because it's such a big name that I don't think a lot of us ever thought that we would get that experience right out of college. So definitely, I don't know if it's my dream job. I would hope that right now I love my job and I love what I'm doing, and we'll just kind of see how it goes from here. But the journalism industry is so crazy in itself that I don't think anyone really knows what's going to happen. Like, will newspapers die? Is it just digital? Is it a different format? Is, I don't know, could TikTok completely take over news? Who knows? We just like literally do not know. So I would say for now, I would say, yeah, it's my dream job just because I love what I do every day.
So one thing I regret here in Arkansas is that hockey is not a huge thing. So to our listening base, who is primarily based here, what do you like about covering hockey that's different from other sports?
Yeah, it's a good question because I had never watched a hockey game until literally 2 years ago. And I just felt like for me, like I grew up in Seattle and we didn't have a pro hockey team. Now finally they're gonna get one in the next couple of years, which is great. But it just really wasn't a sport that was I was around. I was around football, I was around basketball, I was around baseball, like the major sports, what everyone grows up with. But I think for hockey, for me now, I can't really watch like football and baseball and stuff because I think it's too slow. Personally, and hockey is so fast-paced. It's so like up and down the ice. There's so many things to look at. And like I could be looking at an Alex Ovechkin with the puck, or I could be looking at a Kuznetsov who's like skating circles around someone, you know, on the left side. So I think for me and for people that haven't watched hockey before, I would 100% recommend watching in the playoffs because I know people say it's cliche, but playoff hockey is a completely different situation than like the Sabres and the Devils in January. So I just, yeah, I think I love the speed, the pace of it. I mean, and again, like these athletes are literally on skates trying to shoot a small puck past a huge person in a goal that is very small. So I just think the skill and the speed is really intense. And yeah, I don't know. I just can't do any other sports now.
You talked about your time covering high school sports in Dallas and then a little bit in DC. What differences have you noticed now that you're covering a professional sports franchise when it comes to reporting that rather than high school sports?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, first off, you have a lot more eyes on it. So anything I write, I have to understand that it's going to a way bigger audience than someone who would read a profile of the quarterback on a random football team in Virginia. And while that story could maybe get some like views in the community and, you know, make its rounds through high school football Twitter, that's nothing compared to NHL Twitter. That's nothing compared to a Washington Post NHL Twitter. So I just think it's very, you have to be very cognizant of your reporting and understanding who you're writing about and who you're writing to. So with hockey, I think especially, you know, you guys kind of alluded to it already. Some people just don't know the sport. Like you're just not engraved in it. You don't grow up with it. So I have to find a balance in my reporting of how do I make this article interesting to the diehard Capitals fan, but also the one that really has no clue what a blue line is. And try to figure that out and try to tell it the best way possible. And I think with high school football, I think you can just better, I don't know, target your articles. It's easier to understand. People just get it. Like everyone's been a kid. Everyone understands what they're watching when they're watching high school football. But with hockey, I just think in a pro sport and for the post, it's just a lot of different added layers.
You mentioned Twitter, so I want to talk about that for a minute. I see you have the occasional interaction with some of the funnier accounts within the Caps Twitter community that I follow, and they make me laugh routinely. But with Twitter being such a big part of journalism these days, how do you find that sort of work and fun balance on Twitter?
Yeah, it's definitely, I think it's a hard balance to figure out because for a lot of journalists like me at the Post, like again, like we have a platform. So we're not only representing ourselves, but we're representing our organization. So, you know, obviously we can't have a bias. We can't, you know, talk about really anything outside of what I cover is my general rule of thumb is I can interact with like some of those funnier accounts that are like Caps related and like crack some jokes and stuff like that. But I'm never going to like, I'm going to stay in my lane in certain situations. And I think, you know, you can have a voice on Twitter, you can have a personality as long as you're doing it in a professional manner and people understand kind of the difference with your tweets and your writing. And yeah, it's definitely, it's a hard balance because I think a lot of people, especially now, are very vocal and honest about their opinions and want to put it out there. But really, honestly, like, if I'm going to tweet something, I'll probably have to read it over like 5 times and make sure that there's nothing wrong with it, that I like actually understand what I'm doing, because I have to realize that once I hit send, it's like on the internet and it's a Washington Post reporter who tweeted this. So sometimes, yeah, it's fun, it's whatever, but other times I think it's just a lot more serious and you just have to understand that your voice can make a difference in something.
So early in your career, you seem like you've had a lot of success, whether it's been at the Post or the Dallas Morning News or just everything you've done, you seem like you've done a good job. How do you set those goals to be successful and make yourself stand out from everybody else?
Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like, I don't know, I do feel like you have to be really self-driven in this industry because there are so many people, I think that they think that they can do what you do. And in reality, they can't. Like there's a reason why there's only a select amount of sports journalists at the Washington Post, at the New York Times, at ESPN. Like there's a reason why not every single person can do it. And yes, there are bloggers now. There's all these different websites. Like you guys can obviously like post your opinions on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. Like everyone can do that, post their opinions, they can write stories. But I think if you're not self-driven, if you're not self-motivated to get to a certain position, you're probably not going to get there just because there's so much competition with everyone. But I don't know. I just feel like it's a lot about understanding your goals and what you want to do. And in terms of like what goals I set for myself, I think it always was just do something that I love. And I love sports and I love writing and I love putting the two together. And if I feel like I can tell a really good story in a certain way, then I'm just going to strive to do it. I think it's also like, it's a who you know, it's a connections thing. It's who can you put your stories in front of that is going to recommend you to someone else. So while yes, it might take like a little bit of luck in getting your foot in the door in some places, a lot of the time your resume is going to back it up completely. Like if your clips are good, people are going to know your clips are good. Like people will go out of their way to find you to say like, hey, this was great. I just think if you're a good writer, you're not going to be like buried somewhere because someone or somewhere is going to see it, and everything travels so quickly on the internet that yeah, it's very easy to get noticed.
What is it like to cover a generational talent like Alex Ovechkin? I mean, do you ever like step back and think about the magnitude of what you're witnessing on a daily basis?
Yeah, I think it's kind of crazy now. I think a lot of us who cover sports are not like numb to it now. But it's like when you're in a room with Alex Ovechkin basically every day after a practice, it kind of gets like, I don't know, he's just like a guy, which sounds really, really dumb to say because he's not just a guy. But I just think when you're covering someone, you have to be so aware and so cognizant of that you are just covering athletes. Like that's your job. It's, you're never really starstruck, I think, anymore is like a lot of the term that people will say, like, oh, are you starstruck by meeting an Alex Ovechkin or a Sidney Crosby? And for us, it's kind of just like, no, because we talk to them every day. It's just kind of our jobs and they realize it. And I really think it's once they give you that respect back and they understand like you guys are all on a mutual ground, then that's when like the actual good stories can come and the interactions can come. But I mean, definitely like the first time it's kind of surreal being like, oh yeah, like that's Ovechkin. And like, oh yeah, that's the 700th goal. Like, that's cool. Like, I guess we just saw history. I think there are moments when you can take a step back and realize what you're watching, but in the moment, like in the last minute of the game, when like it's a tie game and you don't know if it's going to overtime or not, like I just want someone to score. Like there's no like, oh my God moment there, but yeah, it's interesting.
So you said you're not starstruck by the players, but I've personally experienced being not exactly starstruck, but a little nervous because of all the journalists that I'm around when I'm covering games, like dudes who have been here for 30 plus years. And you, as someone who you said you never watched a hockey game until 2 years ago, did you feel kind of a pressure or like just nervous when you started covering the Post or covering the Capitals for the Post? And there's probably a lot of other guys who've been there for a long time around you.
Oh yeah, for sure. 1,000%. I was nervous. I'm honestly nervous every day covering the Capitals because you are around like media members and athletes and people who have been like done this their entire lives. Like Alex Ovechkin knows how an interview works. Like Kuznetsov knows how an interview works. Like these guys understand our jobs. They understand what we should be asking and vice versa. So yeah, like obviously some players are like very, very good about questions and you're asking them and I think very early on, I wasn't really afraid to be like, hey, can you explain to me like what just happened in the neutral zone? Because I have no clue what you guys are doing. And some players are great about that. Other players are like, it's not my job to tell you. So I think just being around other media members, it's a lot of watching, it's a lot of observing, it's being respectful of organizations that have been there the longest. So, you know, I guess like I'll give DC as an example with the Capitals. I think there's obviously a lot of really good organizations that cover the Capitals. There's the Post, there's the Athletic, there's NBC, there's team reporters, there's radio, there's local TV. And it's just kind of a mutual respect among everyone about who should ask the first question, who should ask the second question. It's you don't interrupt someone. If you can kind of tell that they're trying to ask their line of questioning, you don't jump in. If you had a conversation before with another reporter who was like, oh, I really want to talk to, let's say TJ Oshie about something, like I'm not gonna step in and be like, I would like TJ Oshie first, actually. Like there's a mutual understanding. And I think even though like I'm a young journalist, I am at the Post and there's like a name recognition that comes with that. So yeah, I just think it's a mutual respect thing. And everyone in Washington, at least that I can speak for, has been great about that.
I'm curious about like obviously in a normal time, your travel experiences. Like, do you have to book your own flights, your own hotels? Do you go with the team? Do you go with other media members? What does a day on the road look like for you?
Yeah, so for the Post and for the Capitals, I book my own flights and hotel rooms and all my travel. So it's kind of like a learn as you go experience, honestly. It's figuring out, okay, well, I think they're going to practice every single day that they're on the road. I know they have one off day a week. I have to figure that out. It's a lot of planning of, okay, what hotel is the cheapest slash best? Do I need an Uber to get somewhere? Is it better if I stay 10 minutes out of the city? It's like, it's a lot of different planning and tactics and stuff like that. But yeah, I went to every single away game this year, I think, except for one very early on. So I basically covered the entire season and that's how the Post kind of does it. We're just at every single home and away game and travel sometimes is nuts. You have back to backs where you're traveling to different cities. You have very, very, very early morning flights just to make it to a game. Vice versa. I know some other team, I think some other teams have reporters travel with them. I know in Carolina, the Athletic reporter, she'll travel with the team on the team plane. That works great for some people. It doesn't work great for others. I mean, sometimes deadlines are really hard. And if I'm trying to push my story on deadline, but I'm also trying to board the team plane, that doesn't really add up. So a lot of newspapers approach it different ways, but ultimately, I'm pretty sure it's a team call of whether, you know, you're allowed on a team plane or allowed to stay in like the team hotel.
So I kind of want to go back to your time at Arizona State, which is known to be one of the best journalism schools there are. What are some things that you did to get involved while you were in college to kind of build your resume to where you were able to get the post internship?
Yeah, so for me, I actually didn't do any student-run publications until my senior year. So I went the route of like a bajillion internships. So I started my freshman year and interned for Rivals.com, which is like that recruiting sports site that everyone knows about, like the stars and rankings and all that. So I basically covered Arizona State football and basketball my freshman year for Rivals, and then did the same thing my sophomore year, switched to 24/7 or scout my junior and senior year. So basically just covered football and basketball for that entire time. And personally, I thought that internship experience outside of school was the best way for me to get my name ahead of maybe other people when they were all doing the student newspaper, which obviously was just my personal preference and my thought process, but a lot of really, really, really good student publications are what get kids' names in the door, like in Syracuse, the Daily Orange, like you hear so much about them, and that's because usually a lot of their kids are, you know, in that newspaper. So I think it's all different for everyone, but for me, I just took the route of, let's see how many internships I can do, and hopefully it'll get my name at the top of the file.
I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier. You said you love working at the Post. You don't really want to work anywhere else. Obviously, pro sports beats are sort of a revolving door. I'm interested in two people in particular, Chelsea James and Isabel Kashoudian. They were great. I loved reading their coverage, but then they both transitioned out of sports. Do you think that you would do something like that to stay with the Post, or would you go to another paper to keep covering sports, do you think?
I've thought about this a little bit, honestly, not a lot, but I think, I mean, I trust the Post so much with the people that work there and the editors that are there that I think I trust their opinion. If they think that I would do really well in a different role, if they thought, hey, like, I think your reporting translates well to a politics role or would translate well to a foreign role. I think I value their opinion a lot and probably more so than others. So I would definitely be open to it. I don't think I'd ever not be open to doing something else at the Post. If there's another sports opportunity that opens up elsewhere that someone thinks that I also would be really good at, then obviously that's another possibility. But I definitely would not be like, oh no, I'm not covering politics at the Post, or oh no, I'm not doing this, just because I feel like any opportunity at the Post is a great opportunity. And if my skills can translate well, then why not?
Now, you seem like, during the season at least, you're a very, very busy woman. But do you ever find time, whether it's during the season or now, where you're doing things each day to continue to get better as a journalist, whether it's reading someone else's article or listening to a podcast or something like that? Are there things that you do to continue to get better each day?
Yeah, I think for me, it's a lot of reading like my peers and reading other people at the Post, or reading like my, like other people like The Athletic. Honestly, I read a lot of The Athletic, like features and articles that they do, just because it's so, it's not so different than what we do, but they're so focused on features and the big stories and different angles. And we more so focus on, okay, you have those, but you also have, you know, gamers and, you know, morning posts and things like that. So I don't know. Personally, I just like reading everyone else and what they do with their different teams. Like, I love reading about Dallas because I really like their beat writers. Or I love reading about Tampa because I think some of their beat writers are some of the best. So it's a lot about, you know, the writers that I've met on the road and realize that I really like what they do. And we just kind of like following along for fun and seeing how they cover stuff, because it also gives me ideas on the back end of, oh, if, you know, Ryan Clark with The Athletic in Colorado wrote this about, you know, Andre Burakovsky, I wonder if I could do the same thing with Jacob Vrana, but just like switch the angle a little bit. So there's ways that we can kind of all bounce off of each other. And The Athletic is great because they have such a big network that they all kind of work together. But when you're kind of at a standalone newspaper, you don't really have all of those resources. So I think for me, it's fun to read other people's work and how they cover their teams.
All right, last question before we let you go here. Do you have any sort of advice or tips for budding journalists like us or anybody out there who may be listening?
I would say make a lot of connections as quickly as you possibly can. You know, honestly, I think a lot of people are very receptive in the journalism industry, especially in sports journalism. Like, we are always on our phones. Like, spoiler alert, like, I'm never away from my phone for more than like 5 minutes because they could hire a coach and I could miss it and I'm already all the way behind. So I really feel like shooting a DM, shooting an email, shooting like a, I don't know, a text message or a phone call to someone, we will get back to you. It might take a while, but we will get back to you. So I think that's like the biggest thing is, I think very early on, I was always kind of scared to reach out to other journalists because I was like, oh, I don't really want to waste their time, or I don't want to like seem really annoying for trying to ask a question or getting my foot in the door, but I think a lot of people will remember it. And yeah, that's what I would say. So don't be afraid to shoot your shot is what I'm going to go with there.
All right. Thank you very much. That's definitely something we'll keep in mind. Once again, this was great to have you on. I'm so glad you could do this. I look up to you as a reporter. You're doing a great job with the Capitals, and hopefully we have another NHL season for you to cover this year.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks so much.
Thank you for tuning in to Press Roots this week, and a big, big thank you to Samantha Pell for joining us. Sam just finished her first year on the Capitals beat for the Washington Post. She does really outstanding work for them, and I'm super glad we could chat with her about her experiences. This is our second episode since moving to the Arkansas Traveler website. Hope everyone's finding us there okay. Also hope everyone's following us on Twitter at Press Roots Pod. If you have any feedback or suggestions for guests or whatever, please don't hesitate to tweet at us or DM us. We're always open to that kind of thing. Once again, thanks for listening to Press Roots. For Mason Choate, I'm Robert Stewart, signing off. Take care, everyone.